This is Voice of Ben Brains. I'm Philippe Boucher. Our guest today is Jane Slee, who is back to talk with Voice of Ben Brains. Last time we talked was in November, I think, or maybe October. Mm-hmm. And you said you were going to Europe.
You bet.
So maybe you can tell us a little about this trip.
Well, I went over to Paris and Brussels with the Interparliamentarian Group. It's a cross-Atlantic consortium of legislators from the European Union and the U.S. Congress. It was led by a Republican Senator Bennett from Utah, who's an interesting character. Tallest guy in America who drives a Toyota Prius.
Really?
And a hybrid vehicle.
So really?
We like to see Republican senators driving Priuses. It's a good sign.
So you had that in common with him.
We did have that in common. And basically we were talking about a whole host of cross-Atlantic issues. And my principal interest was twofold. One, to really deliver a respectful but firm message to my European counterparts that on our side of the pond, we just were not going to tolerate the European subsidies for Airbus any longer, and that we were very serious about ending the Airbus subsidies that make it so unfair and disadvantageous to Boeing workers who have lost thousands of jobs as a result of these subsidies by the European Union to Airbus. So that was my principal message, and then I also worked on some of our Microsoft issues to try to calm the waters, at least, to not have the parliamentarians fanning the flames against Microsoft and trying to resolve this this antitrust case that we hope will get resolved at some point in Europe. So that was my two reasons for going, and the Europeans had some messages, too.
So. What were the results of your message?
Well, I think we made some marginal progress on Boeing. You've seen shortly after I met with the new EU trade minister, Peter Mandelson, who had just been on the job for about a week when I first met him, and let him know how serious. And basically my message to him was that there really is a bipartisan consensus on this in the U.S. Congress, that we are very serious about taking action, and then if this is not resolved through negotiation, that America will insist on pulling the trigger in a trade action in the World Trade Organization court to stop these subsidies. And what I wanted to convey to him is that this was not some type of election ploy that was simply going to blow over once the election was over. Because some of the Europeans thought, well, this was just a rhetorical effort, and once the election was over, America would forget about it and go on to other things. And I wanted to make sure he understood that was not the case. We had finally made a decision to take action on this, which I think is overdue, actually, by about 3 years. We've never been able to get Boeing heretofore to agree to take action on this, so I wanted him to know we're very serious about it. And what you heard about a week after that meeting is that he agreed to enter negotiations with the U.S. to try to resolve this issue. So we've deferred actually pulling the trigger now for a few weeks, but I hope this will be bear great fruit.
And from the other side, from the European side, did you hear stuff?
Europeans were anxious about our Iraq policy, obviously. They're anxious about, and rightfully so, I think, on the failure of the U.S. to move on global warming. So we talked about that, and we talked about our various energy policies. As you know, I've been active in Congress pushing the new Apollo energy project to try to develop an energy future that won't end up in the jaws of global warming for the next several centuries. So I was attuned to them and on, you know, aligned with their thinking that we need to move. And, of course, they've been very disappointed by the Bush administration's refusal to take any meaningful action on global warming. So we had mutual frustration on both sides of the Atlantic.
And, I wanted to talk about the energy issues, of course. I saw you attending the conference by Emeril Lovins when he developed his hypercar concept and stuff like that.
Right.
And I was wondering, I mean, is there any hope to have some congressional action on this score?
Well, there's always hope, and actually I'll be introducing this new Apollo Energy bill here in 2 or 3 weeks, which will act as a vehicle for about 1,000 good ideas, and Emery had about 900 of them when he was here in Bainbridge, who's quite a guy. Emery Lovins. Very, very far-sighted person, very well-respected, and realistic, too. It was nice about him is he has a lot of realism in his ideas. So we'll introduce that bill. I can't be terribly optimistic that the heart of this will go through under the Bush administration and the Republican dominance of Congress, but we hope some of these ideas will advance if an energy bill does pass.
I was listening to an interview that was done by my friend Betsy Rosenberg, who does the EcoTalk program on Air America. Mm-hmm. And she was interviewing two Ford executives mm-hmm. about their new SUV, which is a hybrid.
Right.
And I was wondering if you had the impression that the American industry was moving ahead now more into this direction, trying
well,
to...
Well, I think, and I've been, I've been meeting with General Motors to try to see if there's a way we can design a fuel efficiency standard that they could embrace or at least not object to. So we've been trying to drag the industry in that direction. They've made some marginal steps. The Ford SUV is a step forward. GM is intending to have a pickup that's a hybrid pickup here, I think in 06 or 07, I'm not sure which. But they're fairly small runs to date. They're not really huge production numbers they intend to make. So they're dipping their toe into it. And I'm very concerned that Detroit is perhaps losing market share, as they did in the 70s, to foreign foreign producers who saw the need for fuel-efficient cars then, and we lost a decade's worth of production as a result. So we would like them to accelerate, Detroit, to accelerate by orders of magnitude to catch up to foreign producers. These cars are selling like hotcakes. There's a 7-month demand for them and waiting list to get them. They're a great car. I've been driving this Toyota Prius. It's been a wonderful car to date. I'm 6'2", 205, and fit in it really well. So we're trying to get Detroit to be more proactive before we lose all this market share.
I don't know if I understood well what Emery said, but I had the feeling he had said that part of his research had been funded by the Pentagon.
Yes, actually, he was involved in a project that was sort of the brainchild of one of the legendary figures at the Pentagon, whose name escapes me at the moment. I believe his name is Marshall, as I recall, who's been involved in sort of a lot of the over-the-horizon projects at the Pentagon. And this gentleman has become convinced that we need a new horizon of energy research, and mm-hmm. so the Pentagon has started this. So the Pentagon has several projects, and they have the capability of really being a force for new energy research, not only for the research aspect of doing the basic research, but also being the first buyer.
Yeah.
You know, when you develop technology, you need a buyer. And the Pentagon, with its enormous budget, can be an 800-pound gorilla when it comes to energy. For instance, I just got done talking this morning to a company in Tacoma that is developing a gas turbine technology that, if it works, could be 10 to 15% more efficient and a lot more cleaner. It's called a ramjet technology. And they are working with the Department of Energy and, to some degree, DARPA, that's the Defense Advanced Research Program, to get this off and running. So the Pentagon can be a real friend when it comes to energy research, and we intend to put them in harness.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I understood well, because I thought this was really an interesting point.
Well, I'll give you an example. A company called NEA Systems in Bothell is developing a fuel cell battery, which can last 3 to 5 times longer than a regular battery. And it is a fuel cell. It's very small, and it could operate computer and electronics equipment. The Department of Defense is very interested in that, in having a longer... because they've got a huge number of batteries, obviously, in communication technology for the Pentagon. So they're interested, and we intend them to be a first buyer when we get prototypes going.
And do you think the people we have been mentioning in the Pentagon, I mean, have some weight, or are they marginal thinker of what the Pentagon is?
No, I think some of the advanced thinkers, not only weight, but money. They've got a huge budget there. You know, we're talking $400 billion a year. So once you get the Department of Defense to embrace this, it could be a tremendous thing. You know, what we're finding in a lot of energy technologies is that it's all about scale. Once you scale up a technology, its price can go down dramatically. For instance, if we start having the DOD buy solar technology, for instance, we think that could be a boost to the solar cell industry, because once you scale up, for instance, every time you increase the number of solar cells that are purchased, and I hope I get my number right, by a factor of 10, the price comes down 20%. It's been a very steady curve bringing the prices down. So getting the Department of Defense to buy in quantity is a huge step forward for us, and we're working that angle.
Yeah, I was reading something about a new program that was proposed by, I don't remember, a group about solar technology, but I don't think they were mentioning it at the Pentagon, but maybe they were trying to work with them.
We are looking for every way we can to get the Pentagon fire with interest here.
Can they help with the state ferries?
maybe not, until we make them part of the National Guard.
So I read that you had obtained, or you were asking for some funding.
Yeah,
for
so we
ferries.
Actually had very good success in the transportation bill. We increased the funding federally for the national ferry program by about $200 million this year, which is good news for the state of Washington because we were about a third of the fund. So we really had a big success in the bill that came out. Now, the transportation package hasn't passed yet. Yeah. As you know, the president threatened to veto it last year. So we have to get a bill. But if we get a bill, it'll have a good number in it.
We're crossing our fingers. And people are pretty upset. You probably heard about it, about the prices going up and having people to pay more.
Right.
More of that. Do you have a comment on that? You think people should pay 80% or more of what the ferry
cost
is?
I would like to see a larger subsidy for the ferries. And I think it's a shame that the ferry budget has been cut. Now, the reason that has happened, and I think people need to be very, they need to know the truth about this. And the truth is that when the people passed these initiatives to cut taxes, they cut the revenues that went to the ferry system. And the ferry system cannot snap their fingers. Money does not grow on trees anywhere in Bainbridge Island. Yeah. It comes from our tax revenues. And when the people of the state of Washington voted to cut those tax revenues, the ferry system had a very, very large hit because they were very dependent on a lot of those motor vehicle taxes. So as a result, their budgets have been whacked. And the state legislature has really not adequately made them up to date. I would like to see them succeed in doing that. Now, on the federal level, like I said, we've increased the federal budget $200 million for ferry assistance, and I hope a significant part of that's going to end up right here in the Bainbridge Island, Seattle.
Do you have any advice for the locals here who are just upset? Because obviously they didn't vote for, probably, I think, knowing Bainbridge, for the tax cuts.
Well, interesting.
So
enough,
the rest of Washington did.
Interesting enough, they did. Not Bainbridge Island, but the rest of Kitsap County, if my memory serves, did vote for these tax cutting measures,
great.
Even though they're ferry dependent. And it always mystified me because I thought, when you do that, you should be aware that your ferry prices are going to go up dramatically as a result of that. So. Maybe,
yeah, the feeling the people in Bremerton were aware of that. Maybe they didn't.
It just surprised me that the people of Kitsap County that are so ferry dependent would vote for a measure that would by necessity increase the fares dramatically. I think that's most unfortunate.
Yeah. I mentioned that I had a few friends who knew that I was going to meet you, so they had a few questions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a friend who is concerned about the filibuster.
Uh-huh.
Thinking, is that going to be threatened?
Right. I don't know for sure because I'm not sitting in the secret meetings of the Republican caucus, but I doubt at the moment that the Republicans will blow up the foundation of the U.S. Senate, which has been the filibuster, which has been a protection of minority interests in the Senate from, day one in American history, and I doubt that they want to depart so radically for something that's been so fundamental in American democracy. This has been a very, very strong, although it's not constitutional, it's been a very strong tradition that has been effective in protecting minority interests against radical change. Now, it can also be very frustrating, obviously, if you are against someone who wants to slow down a particular change. But I'm cautious about making changes like that because American democracy has worked well, and I think the filibuster is in part of that. So if I had a dollar to bet, I'd bet that they do not abandon it and that we sit down and try to reason with the administration not to continue to send up such a clear slate of right-wing ideologues on the court.
Yeah.
Hope that gets resolved.
People are worried
mm-hmm.
about that, too.
Right.
Another question also related to the electoral process. All the problems that have been with no paper trail or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any new information or any progress about how that's going to be resolved?
Well, it certainly got a lot of problems. As you know, I'm a co-sponsor of a bill that would require a paper trail, a paper receipt, so that you have an assurance that your vote isn't counted, indeed counted. That seems to be fundamental. And the technology exists to do this. It's a no-brainer. We know it can be done. It doesn't cost any significant amount of money. Unfortunately, the Republican majority has not allowed that bill to have a vote.
Hmm.
I think it might pass if we got a vote, but they won't bring it up for a vote. But there are a host of other problems. In Ohio, we experienced the problem of not having their voting machines in urban precincts. It happened to be Democratic precincts. We had a lot of problems in provisional ballots and not allowing people to cast provisional ballots if they weren't in exactly the right precinct at the exact moment. So I think there needs to be federal legislation which will continue to pressure the states to improve these systems. Probably isn't going to happen this year because the Republicans don't want to talk about electoral reform. Hmm. I think that's misguided. They could be on the short end of the stick one of these years, and you'd think they'd be in favor of getting every vote to count. But that probably will not be the case, and that's going to be delayed until the Democrats take back the House.
When is that?
Sooner than later.
Any other thing you'd like to add?
No, except that I hope people enjoy the weather we're having. And,
oh, yeah.
And I don't want them to change their minds about global warming just because it's nice out.
Well, you know, they've seen that there's no snow. I mean, there's been a real problem about that.
Major,
so I think it's
a major problem. We are experiencing an unprecedented drought. Met with the governor last week about this. We're going to have to start taking water conservation measures, I think, very early this year. We're going to have to do some things about forest fires, which could be a horrendous problem this year. And this is going to be something everybody's going to have to chip in on because it's a we've never had such a terrible year.
You'll have new technologies as well in terms of collecting water.
Using it well is the best. The way to create water is to use it well.
Saving it well.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Take care.
See you.
Bye.